supporting WHYY Penn Medicine, helping to find new cures for cancer. With life-saving clinical trials and advanced surgical techniques, Penn Medicine is offering more hope for patients everywhere. Learn more at PennMedicine.org/cancer. Penn Medicine, what's next?
I'm Dan Gottlieb. Thanks for listening to Voices in the Family. It's well known that one's mental health or emotional well-being affects one's physical health, and the reverse, of course, is also true. But the practice of medicine today doesn't really seem to reflect this. Primary care physicians still treat the body and refer people with emotional problems elsewhere. However, 67% of people with behavioral health disorders don't get appropriate treatment. And nearly half of the people doctors refer out don't make their first appointment. On today's show, we'll talk about what's being done to integrate physical, mental, emotional, social, and maybe even spiritual health. We've got experts today joining us from both domains, physical and mental health sides of the equation today. Dr. Frank DeGree is chair of the Department of Family Medicine at the University of Colorado School of Medicine. And he's a leading advocate in integrating physical and behavioral health care. He's currently chair of the board of directors of the Family Physicians Inquiries Network, among many other things. Frank DeGree, welcome to the show. We don't quite have him on the line yet. We've also got Norman Anderson. He's the CEO and executive vice president of the American Psychological Association. Prior to this, he was first director of the Office of Behavioral and Social Sciences Research at the National Institute of Health. He's also well known for his research on health and behavior as well as ethnic disparities. Norman Anderson, welcome to the show.
Great. Thanks for having me.
And later on in the show, we're going to be talking with Donna Torresi. She's executive director of the Family Practice and Counseling Network, which integrates physical and mental health here in Philadelphia and has been doing so for quite a number of years. Give us a call if you want to join the conversation. How has this disparity affected your overall health? Communication between your doctors. Does your doctor ask about your emotional well-being, your even your economic well-being, your family relationships, and do they come into play with your physical health? Give us a call, 888-477-9499. Again, that's 888-477-9499. Norman, let's take a step back here and look at the big picture. Health is more than simply an absence of illness. For one to be healthy, they need a sense of well-being. They need to be involved in community, have a network around them. The healthcare system focuses more on symptom removal than people in context. And Norman, you know, as a fellow psychologist, I'm concerned that some psychotherapies now are more focused on symptom removal than the whole person.
Well, yes. Again, thanks for having me on the show. And I think the traditional approach to medicine and healthcare in this country, you know, frankly, has had a history of success, beginning decades ago with the advent of germ theory to help us treat and mitigate some of the just really dramatic causes of illness, say at the turn of the century, due to infectious diseases, for example. So that has a history of success, but it's not the whole story. And particularly these days, when we realize that most of the problems and issues that are faced within our healthcare system, the reasons people go to their physicians have to do with chronic diseases, things such as diabetes, heart disease, hypertension, chronic back pain, obesity, depression, anxiety. These are illnesses that are long-standing, and they don't have a single cause. There's not a single pathogen that causes them. But what we know is that there are several categories of causes. These are multifaceted problems involving, yes, biological, genetic factors are important, but those biological factors interact with behavioral, psychological, social, and environmental factors. And those illnesses can not only be caused or worsened by some of these what we call biopsychosocial factors. The illnesses can affect one's psychological and behavioral well-being as well. So there's this dynamic interaction among what I call the different levels of causation of illnesses. So the healthcare system now really needs to be redesigned to take into account, A, the problems that most patients are having, which are chronic, and the causes of those problems, and to implement systems where all of those different levels of causes can be addressed. That's really how you help people get better these days.
Well, let me turn to you, and I know we've got you on the line. We got our phones working. Frank DeGree, thanks so much for joining us.
Sure.
So let me throw out a softball here. What's the problem with the system we have today? Give us examples of how and why it's not working.
Well, I don't want to be too radical or too inflammatory unnecessarily here, but we have a healthcare system that is really good at making money and is not necessarily devoted to producing or creating or even maintaining health. That creates a problem when there's a divergence or a difference between something that can keep a hospital in business, such as filling beds, and something that might help a population be healthier, such as remaining healthy enough to avoid hospitalizations.
How do we think about this? I mean, hospitals, physicians get paid for services rendered. They don't get paid for services avoided.
Oh, that's changing. One of the things that I am most encouraged about right now is some of the emerging alternative ways of paying for health and health care that line up revenues associated with health and health promotion and health care with actual production of health. For example, in the world of primary care right now, we're seeing some payment schemes that involve paying for a clinician or a clinic or a practice or a system of clinics to maintain the health of a panel of patients or a population of patients or an employer's workforce, where the practice gets a certain amount of money and the responsibility is to do those things that produce health, not just absence of disease, but health, the capacity to work at full functioning and to enjoy a full life. And the payment turns on the ability to do those things as they're measured by ways we have measuring
this them. Is different. What you're describing here is different from the old HMO model.
Oh yeah. It's completely different. It's different principally insofar as it's now much more possible to measure whether you're actually doing things that produce health and whether you're actually producing health. If those are the outcomes on which, let's say primary care clinicians are paid, then it's possible to organize practice not around visits that you get paid for on a sort of a widget hamster wheel basis, but practices that are organized around providing services that make people healthier, help people become healthier.
I wonder, and I'm going to turn back to you, Norman, how did we get here in the first place, where the body goes one place and the mind goes the other? Did it really start with Descartes in 1641 when he said they were completely different? Really?
I'm sorry. I have an awful connection. I didn't make out your question.
It's too bad because it was just brilliant. It was just brilliant. Can you?
I know.
Damn.
I hear you better now. Try it again.
Can you hear me now?
Yes.
Well, we might have to try to get a better line. Are you on a landline by any chance, Norman?
I am on a quasi landline,
yeah.
Let me see if I can do something to repair.
I'll tell you what we'll do. I'm going to chat with Frank, and we're going to try to get you a better line. Frank, I hope you can answer that question. I mean, are we really following in the footsteps of Rene Descartes?
To some extent, yes. I think so. Although there's certainly more to the story than a philosophical or a natural history formulation of the mind as separate from the body. We have also to thank for this the rising success of specialism and hyperspecialism and the sort of reductionism that followed from that. There's a scientific method that has been quite successful by concentrating more and more deeply on less and less material, which has produced big wins in certain areas, particularly around infectious diseases and acute problems.
Give us an example of that.
Oh, sure. The eradication of some of the major disorders in the history of human health on the planet. For example, smallpox or polio, and the resulting study of those diseases and discovering their cause and formulating, in those cases, an immunization that specifically eradicated it was a definitive enough instrument for eliminating them to where we didn't have to pay attention to the other factors that had to do with living conditions and other health factors.
Okay.
However, in the age of chronic diseases being the dominant form of disease and disability now, those single factor disorders aren't really the most useful way to think about this. And so considering the ecological context and the multifactorial nature of the chronic ailments that plague us now, chronic diseases and our lack of well-being, all related to multiple factors in the way we live, in the way we make decisions around health, and in our social circumstances. Poverty, education, things like that matter much more with respect to chronic diseases than if you ignore them by fragmenting and specializing care. It is impossible to reach a state of optimal health. It is eminently possible to eliminate tuberculosis, or a better example would be smallpox or pneumococcus. But it is impossible to reach a state of optimal health without a whole person approach to health care when you're dealing with the chronic things that plague
us. Well, I wonder to what extent, and I'll, you know, we've got Norman back on the line. I'll ask both of you, to what extent are doctors trained in this? I've been living with a spinal cord injury for 35 years, and not once has a doctor asked me about the quality of my intimate relationships, about whether or not there is love in my life, if I have a network. What about my spiritual beliefs? Do I have any economic concerns about this? Not once in 35 years. So there's got to be a good deal of training involved. And my fear is doctors today are being trained more and more in biology and symptom removal.
Well, I'll take a quick crack at that, and then I'll let Norman have a run here. Because I think that in the world, I'm a family doc, and I work in the world of primary care. I'm trying to train a primary care workforce, and we are moving, I would say, very definitively in the direction of adopting a comprehensive biopsychosocial spiritual model of health and health care, and understanding all of those several factors that you named and their importance in health. That is a foundational principle of training the primary care workforce. However, it is not the basis on which primary care clinicians are paid, and it is not the basis on which the rest of the healthcare system to which we must relate operates. And so we've got forces of payment, we've got forces of culture, and we've got forces of inertia working against that, even at the same time as we're trying to train in a more comprehensive whole person style.
So you're like a salmon, really just swimming against the tide.
Yes.
Yeah.
So this is Norman Anderson. It's so good to be back on the call. But yes, I agree with Dr. DeGree that on the medical side there are pockets of physicians who really get the biopsychosocial approach, primary care, family medicine, pediatrics, for example, really do understand these interactions. On the psychology side, we've had a decades long history of psychologists being involved in something called health psychology, again, that has produced a large body of research showing these dynamic interactions and how behavioral and psychological and social factors affect not just health and illness, but all the way down to the pathophysiology and genetic levels of analysis, as well as showing how non-pharmacologic approaches work. But as Dr. DeGree said, there are structural barriers for the full implementation of our scientific knowledge about these interactions.
I want to go a step beyond, Norman, beyond proving your point and showing evidence. I wonder if the APA has any programs or involved in training these primary care docs and in how to ask these questions about how to interview patients with the bigger picture in mind. Do psychologists play a role in that?
Yes, and I have to say that training cuts both ways, both on the medical side and the psychological side. But one of the things that we're doing within APA is, a few years ago we approved the first strategic plan for the American Psychological Association that has only three goals. One of those goals has to do with advancing psychology's role in improving our country's health. So when you think about an organization as large as APA that has three strategic goals, and one of them has to do with the topic of this conversation, it's quite a dramatic step. And we just found that as part of that strategic plan, we just found something called the Center for Psychology and Health. And one of the objectives within that center is to really focus on education and training, principally among psychologists. So, because although, yes, there are a lot of, hundreds if not thousands of health psychologists out there, the large majority of our psychology community was not trained in these dynamic interactions that we're talking about that affect health.
Yeah, you're not kidding. I certainly wasn't. And, you know, my training was, I think, right on the heels of Freud's bar mitzvah. So, it goes back a bit. Listen, we've got to take a short break. We'll be back in 60 seconds. We're talking with Dr. Frank DeGree. He's chair of the Department of Family Medicine, the University of Colorado School of Medicine. And he's really on the forefront of getting medicine integrated, mind and body. Norman Anderson is CEO of and executive vice president of the American Psychological Association, and he likewise is well known for his research on health and behavior. When we come back from our break, we're also going to be talking with Donna Torresi. She's executive director of the Family Practice and Counseling Network, and they've been doing this for over 20 years. We've got a few lines open, and we will be taking your calls after this break. Our number is 888-477-9499. Excuse me, 888-477-9499. Tell us your experience. We'd like to hear from, we'd like to hear about it, positive and negative. 888-477-9499. Well, I'm Dan Gottlieb. You're listening to Voices in the Family right here on WHYY-FM.
The Philadelphia Foundation supports WHYY. The Philadelphia Foundation helps private foundations by partnering on administration and grant making. Private foundations also can establish a donor-advised fund to save time and reduce costs. What's more, the Philadelphia Foundation also offers solutions when a private foundation has run its course. The Philadelphia Foundation, 215-563-6417 or philafound.org.
The Breast Center of Doylestown Hospital is proud to support WHYY, offering personalized care plans and advanced surgical techniques, including the newest type of breast-conserving surgery. The specialists of the Breast Center of Doylestown Hospital are your resource for comprehensive breast care close to home. Pink Party, a breast health event in Warrington, Pennsylvania on Monday, October 13th, will feature a health discussion, therapy demonstrations, refreshments, and more. Details at dh.org/pinkparty.
We're back on Voices in the Family. I'm Dan Gottlieb, your host. We're talking about integrating physical and behavioral health. I don't always have a problem with that word, behavioral health. My behavior is fine, but my mind is not. We're talking with Norman Anderson, CEO and executive vice president of the American Psychological Association, Dr. Frank DeGree. Who's chair of the Department of Family Medicine at University of Colorado. Both are on the forefront of this work. And now we're going to be talking with Donna
Torresi.
Thank you. I didn't want to get your name wrong yet again. She's the executive director of the Family Practice and Counseling Network. And you've been doing this work for 20 years. By the way, our phone number is 888-477-9499. What's the work you're doing, Donna?
Started about 22 years ago. We, Family Practice and Counseling Network is part of a larger organization called Resources for Human Development. We were able to obtain a grant to open up a healthcare center in a public housing community. So we renovated 3 apartments, hired 11 staff, one of whom was a psychologist. From the very beginning...
Wait a minute. Why? Why did you hire a psychologist? You've got all these health problems. It's 22 years ago. Why a psychologist?
I did not think it was possible to serve particularly a low-income community without providing mental health care. There's too much trauma. There's too much depression, anxiety. I didn't think we could get people to take care of their physical health without paying attention to them as a whole person.
So, tell us about how the program worked
back then. So, we've come a long way. We had a psychologist who was very integrated into the community, but we became licensed as a mental health center, and we started having to follow a lot of the rules of our payer, Medicaid payer, which is great. And we found that when we admitted someone to a mental health care, we had to spend several weeks in filling out forms and taking a history. And the system worked really great, we found, for a small percentage of our patients. And there was always a waiting list. So it became very frustrating and almost a little bit adversarial between our primary care staff and our now 20 to 25 behavioral health therapists, because the we weren't able to be as responsive to the patient who walks in today into my office and says, and we find out their blood sugar's out of control. And we couldn't pull in a therapist who had a strict schedule and was seeing, you know, five or six people a day and filling out lots of paperwork. So we started moving to an integrated format where we actually, in integration can mean a lot of different things, but for us, it means putting a therapist right into primary care, sitting them in the same, we call them touchdown spaces, but in the same physical office as our primary care providers. So when a patient comes in to see me and says, I'm ashamed to tell you this, but I've known you a long time. I just got married, and my husband is abusing me, and I don't know what to do. Hmm. Right on the spot, I don't have to refer her somewhere else, come back another time, be on a waiting list, pay for another bus ride, find childcare. I can say, today, right now, I'm going to bring a therapist into the office after you and I talk for a little bit, and I'm going to engage our attorney into the office to help all of you take care of this very dangerous situation.
Okay, that's a fortune to have all these people right at your beck and call. That's a fortune. You must have a well-endowed program.
Well, not exactly.
That was a setup.
We have a federal grant because we are a community health center funded by Health Resources Service Administration, and we're very fortunate to have that. But we were really lucky when we got into the bind of feeling so frustrated that a patient who needed someone on the spot could not get help. We went to Community Behavioral Health, which is the Medicaid funder in Philadelphia, and they were very responsive at helping us set up a new system called the integrated model and said, for your patients who have Medicaid, we'll actually reimburse you for that visit, and we'll reimburse you at a reasonable rate. So we had a lot of support.
All right. So I want to turn to let me start with you, Frank DeGree. Boy, you know, you've been listening to Donna. Sounds pretty easy.
For those who
didn't hear well, that was a chortle on Frank's part. Go on.
It's easy to say, but it's hard to do. I promise you that Donna could fill not just the rest of the hour, but the rest of the day with war stories about. Mm-hmm. Helping people learn to work together, about how you accomplish warm handoffs, about how you keep everybody busy so that your workflow is good. There are a lot of details that make this difficult. I believe that the most difficult problem is, there are two. One is getting paid for doing the right thing, and the other is sharing information across the mental health and the primary care medical health sectors. If you can somehow accomplish those two, if you can overcome those two barriers, then you can do this. And Donna is ahead of the curve. She has succeeded where people are beginning to try and succeed now. In many places across the nation, we're beginning to see integrated systems of care emerge and sustainable integrated systems of care. We often use grants to start these, but after you figure out how to do it and after you have some practice at understanding the nuances of staffing and workflow, you can do this within our current system successfully.
Norman, actually, one of the studies that came out of the American Psychological Association said that only 1 in 10 people surveyed said their health care had been coordinated among different providers. I mean, that not only is that a tragedy, it's dangerous.
It's tragic. It's dangerous. It's really and actually now it's really anti scientific, because we have enough evidence to know that it shouldn't be that way. The work that Donna Teresi is doing, you know, in Philadelphia, there are a number of programs across the country. Actually, Philadelphia has a couple under the direction of Dr. Arthur Evans, the commissioner of mental health there, and other places around the country are doing it. But they're making heroic efforts at being successful at this. They're actually working, you know, against the system to try to overcome some of the barriers that Dr. DeGree has talked about. And it shouldn't be that way. You know, we should have a healthcare system that rewards this, that reinforces and rewards this kind of integration. The conversation is occurring, but we're a long way from where we need to be.
I wonder how this gets dealt with, these overwhelming problems. Now, I'm going to turn to you, Donna, because you're on the front lines. What do you do when someone comes to you who's living in a community where there's lots of poverty, lots of substance abuse, where there's substance abuse in the house, there's a history of trauma? It's like the whole world is collapsing around them, and they're just trying to stay afloat. And P.S., they have diabetes, or they have obesity, or they have cardiac problems. What can be done for somebody who walks into your office and tells you that story?
As I'm listening to you, one of the first things I'm thinking of is how much we have to take care of our healthcare providers, because the story you just told is overwhelming and exhausting.
And not unusual.
Not at all unusual. And the way we have been able to hold our healthcare providers able to continue to do this is by providing a team that works together. And we also know we can't fix everything. We have a multidisciplinary team. We bring that therapist right in the exam room at the moment, normalizing mental health, because it's now being done in the physical exam room, where patients can get on-the-spot care. We have social workers. We have diabetic educators, psychiatrists. We have a psychiatric nurse practitioner. It's really the capacity of the multidisciplinary team to work together in a way that they're not only treating the patient, but they're holding each other up. And they're taking care of each other in the process of taking care of the patient.
I do an awful lot of talks for healthcare providers in various hospitals, and it's almost as though they don't know that they can and should take care of themselves. Their focus is always out on others. And, you know, look, you know, Frank and Norman, you know about burnout, you know, in the healthcare field, and this is probably the major cause of it.
Absolutely, and we can't, as you suggested, we can't expect our best healthcare providers to give 100% when they are being drained by the constant exposure to some of these just amazing problems that Dr. Teresi mentioned. So, yes, we have to make sure that we put into place means of supporting our helpers, and I think the team approach does provide a context for that.
Let's go to the phones. We've had people hanging on for a long time. Let's start with Barbara. Hi, Barbara.
Yes. Good afternoon. I am enjoying the program. I am happy to say I was very fortunate growing up to have a marvelous family doctor who did, in fact, treat my grandparents, my parents, and my siblings and me. And he started every visit with, "How are you?" looking directly into my eyes. And I appreciated that. And later in life, as I got my dietetics training,
I practice that as well, and I do think that training to look at the whole person is essential.
I would just have a feeling that that doctor may have never been sued for malpractice.
Yes.
That's just a guess. Barbara, thanks so much for your call.
Thank you.
So I want to talk about what's realistic here. And before we go to our break, you know, we need to make these major changes, structural changes, in our overall health care system. But realistically, Congress can't agree on how to tie their own shoes, let alone pass any significant legislation. So what's going to happen here, realistically, and what needs to happen? I'll start with you, Norman.
Well, I mean, we have made a dramatic step forward with aspects of the Affordable Care Act that do, in fact, reinforce the notion of coordinated team-based care. I think what really needs to happen is people who pay for health care really need to think about innovative models for allowing the kind of team-based care that you've heard about to occur. You've heard again and again on this call, that is a major deterrent and barrier for the things that we know are best for our patients, things that are patient-centered and really take care of not just their biological problems, but their life problems that influence those biological problems. The payment models are the major barriers to this. So there may be a role for Congress in this ultimately, but I think now we've got at least the legislation that says, yes, this is the way we need to go. And there are great demonstration projects out there now looking at different types of payment models. But to me, that's really one of the biggest barriers.
When we come back from our break, I want to talk about those different models. And I want to hear more about Donna's model and what makes it so effective. And so let's take a 60-second break. When we come back, we've got a lot of callers waiting on the line, so we'll get to your calls, too. We're talking with Dr. Norman Anderson, CEO and Executive Vice President of the American Psychological Association, Dr. Frank DeGree, Chair of the Department of Family Medicine at the University of Colorado. Both are on the national forefront of creating and innovating around integrative medicine. I'm also here in the studio with Donna Teresi, who's the executive director of the Family Practice and Counseling Network, which is doing this very, very successfully. Well, I'm Dan Gottlieb. You're listening to Voices in the Family right here on WHYY-FM.
The College of Nursing at Villanova University offers a Doctor of Nursing Practice program designed for advanced practice nurses and nurse administrators. With full or part-time options and rolling admission, Villanova's online DNP includes on-campus seminars and interdisciplinary faculty who support you in translating nursing science to improve healthcare outcomes. Cohorts start each June. Villanova's Doctor of Nursing Practice program supports WHYY. Villanova.edu/nursing/DNP.
Mural Arts Month supports WHYY. Running throughout the month of October, this celebration of public art includes a photo exhibition, mural dedications, tours, and artist talks centered around the theme of Art Ignites Change. On Tuesday, October 14th, WHYY will host Mural Lab Live, an intimate evening with eight people who understand the role of art in improving the civic landscape of cities. More, including the entire schedule of events, is available online at muralarts.org/artignites.
And we're back on Voices in the Family. I'm Dan Gottlieb, your host. We're talking about integrating medicine, mind and body, with Drs. Norman Anderson and Frank DeGree, and right here in the studio with Donna Teresi. Donna, during our break, you said there was something you felt was important we got to before we ended the show.
Sure. I think if we're going to do this right, there has to be parity. And I think we're seeing some positive changes with the Affordable Care Act. We're seeing something finally positive happening in Pennsylvania with the expansion of health care that should make it universal for almost everyone. It also has to happen on the employer level. I had one of my colleagues say to me the other day, he said, you know, if a staff member came in and said, you know, I need to leave early every Tuesday because I need to see my therapist at 3 o'clock, you know, how would we as an employer react? If the second patient came in and said, you know, have my chemotherapy at 3 o'clock, you know, every Thursday I need to leave early, how would we react? And I think there's no comparison. I mean, we would very quickly expect the employer to say, chemotherapy, of course, take the whole day off, take what you need. But would we treat the same person or the person who's having the mental health problem in the same way? And I'm not sure we would. In fact, I'm pretty sure we wouldn't.
So it's kind of an internal parity because, you know, in terms of paying, theoretically anyway, parity is the law of the land. Is it not, Norman?
It absolutely is, but the implementation of that law is frankly uneven across the country. And we're identifying pockets of resistance, if you will, entities, organizations trying to get around the law. So that's something and frankly, the federal government is very vigilant about.
Well, on the one hand, you know, they want to get around the law for economic reasons, you know, or you just look at dollars and cents, and mental health care can be pretty expensive.
And it's pretty expensive not to pay attention to as well. There are studies looking at what happens in primary care, and when, for example, patients who have diabetes with co-occurring depression, if the depression is treated, the health care costs go down dramatically, even beyond the cost of providing the treatment for the depression. So we're now finding more and more studies showing that there is actually an economic benefit for attention to mental health problems. So I think that evidence needs to get out there. We need to talk more about that side of it. That said, the reason we need to pay attention to mental health and behavioral health is not just economic. I mean, it costs a lot of money to have open heart surgery, but we don't question that because it's good for the person's health and well-being. And so we have to get to that point where we're not justifying the inclusion of mental and behavioral health simply on economic terms.
Let's go back to the phones. We've got Steve on the line. Hey, Steve.
Hi, doctor. Hey, how are you? Thanks for taking my call. I'm currently with an ACT team in Delaware County. We're a team approach. We're therapists, psychiatrists, nurses, any kind of specialty. We provide holistic care, making sure our clients get both medical and psychiatric. But I just joined these guys 6 months ago. I've been in the field 20 years. Prior to that, for another health system, I was what they called an engagement specialist. And it was a joint position between the health system and Delaware County's mental health provider. And my job was to not only get referrals for individuals on our psychiatric unit, but I also work closely with risk management. And I engaged individuals through crisis services, through our rehab units, through the ERs. We had 5 ERs. My job was to set them up with basically anything they needed, housing, benefits, medical care, obviously psychiatric care.
So the message is that this is being done in various places, if not nationwide. The work is being done, and there's lots of people around that are thinking along those lines.
Yeah. There's a really good program, a webinar out of the University of Massachusetts Medical School. They offered quarterly. Dr. Alexander Blout, I believe, is the gentleman who does it. And it's a program coordinating mental health treatment in a primary care setting. And actually, when I went through it, the coolest thing about it was most of the participants were mental health and physical health providers on Indian reservations.
That's interesting.
And how they were including not just mental health and physical health, but also spiritual.
Well, I really appreciate your call and your input. I want to turn to Norman Anderson around this. There is a lot being done, isn't there, Norm?
Yes. I mean, we are always amazed. Every week we find other models where the kinds of integrated care approaches that we've been talking about today have been implemented, and they are successful. I mean, just in this state of Pennsylvania, there are a number of places, such as Geisinger out in Pittsburgh. There's a collaboration between Penn and Children's Hospital of Philadelphia, again, in collaboration with Arthur Evans, with who's Commissioner of Mental Health in Philadelphia. So, yes, it's happening. And what one of the things that we want to do with the APA Center for Psychology and Health is to publicize, certainly among within the psychology community, but also beyond, that, yes, this can happen even with the barriers that currently exist.
Of course.
While at the same time we're working to try to remove the barriers to not make it so difficult to do this.
Well, I appreciate that because I was starting to get pretty depressed here.
Yeah.
Frank, I want to talk about what you're learning. I mean, you're really on the forefront of these programs. Tell us about the program you had talked to us about earlier, about a program in North Carolina that instituted a home health program. Do we have you?
Are you?
Frank?
Yes.
Yeah. Could you tell us about the program in North Carolina that you had referred to that instituted a health home program?
North Carolina.
You don't recall?
No.
Or I could get my state screwed up. It could have been Tennessee. But this is
there actually is a very interesting and progressive set of safety net clinics in Tennessee called the Cherokee Health System, which has deeply integrated whole person care with a large number of mental health professionals of various disciplines, a large number of primary care and specialty health care disciplines, all working together in an integrated system. The Cherokee system is, they've probably been at it about 20 years. They now have 51 clinics in East Tennessee. Their motto is, Cherokee goes where the grass is browner. They work where there's the most need and not where they have the best prospects for making money or even breaking even. And they work within our current payment system, and they work so smartly and so efficiently at providing whole person integrated care that they're able to make ends meet, and they've continued to grow for the last 20 years.
What's it look like? How do they do it?
They do some things that no one else is doing yet. They have created roles. For example, their appointment makers are very high-end, very well-trained people who have access to several dozen schedules, and they arrange appointments for people so that they can be seen by two or three of their clinicians at one visit. And they thereby keep all of their clinicians working fairly continuously, communicating fairly deeply with each other, and they foster that team concept. And because integration, you heard Norm say just a moment ago that there's more and more evidence emerging that it's not just that you can be doing the right thing with integrated care, but you can actually be doing something that's cost effective as well as improving health. They have really figured out the formula for doing this in such a way that it saves money and it improves health.
So
they are a stable, sustainable system right now.
So let me turn to you in just a little over a minute we have left or less. Look into your dream material. What's your dream for what all this is going to look like in 20, 30, 40 years?
Well, my dream is that on the front end, on the training end, both medicine, psychology, and other behavioral health disciplines will emphasize interprofessional care for people who want to go into the healthcare arena. That from the very beginning, we recognize the multifaceted nature of health and illness, and we train according to that at the training level. Secondly, our healthcare system is set up to treat patients and to care for patients to meet all of their needs in a very holistic way, and that there are payment models that support that whole person approach. It's a pretty straightforward vision. Getting there is challenging, but that's where I think we need to be.
I couldn't agree more. Donna, just a couple of seconds. What's your program going to look like in 20 years?
I hope it's going to be better than it is now. One of the things that we are able to do is, I heard a caller saying before that she was asked by her doctor, how are you doing? We ask questions about depression, about trauma. Has anything bad ever happened to you? We get amazing responses. The first time I asked that about a child, he had seen his sibling shot.
We learned to ask better questions. And we learned to be more responsive.
Yeah. Yeah.
I do want to tell all three of you before I say goodbye, we've had a lot of calls that we weren't able to get to with good news, people who felt their lives were saved in integrative medicine by doctors who worked with psychologists, people who work in integrative medicine departments, that they see the effects every day. And one woman is on the line who works with a program very much like yours, Donna, that's very successful. So there is hope on the horizon. I want to thank all three of you so very much for joining us, and most important, for the work you do. As a consumer, I'm very grateful to all three of you.
Thank you. Thanks for having us.
My guests have been Drs. Norman Anderson and Frank Degree, and we've also been joined here in the studio by Donna Torisi, who's executive director of a very effective program. Well, you can download our podcasts at whyy.org/voices. Engineer's been Charlie Kyer. Lindsay Carfagno's our summer intern. Elizabeth Perez Luna is our EP of audio content. Mike and Scott's our producer. Emily Haas is leaving us today. Best wishes for you.